You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, and as always, I'm the host of this wonderful show, and join me on the other line is a guy who did not win the J. Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award from Forbes.com and the West Indianapolis Community News, Mr. Tony East. Tony, it's only been 2 days since we last talked, or at least 2 days since people think we last talked. How are you?
I'm good. And yeah, like you mentioned, I did not win the J. Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award. Malcolm Brogdon did, though, and I cannot think of a more deserving person to win the Citizenship Award. It is voted on by the Pro Basketball Writers Association, so they chose Brogdon as the Citizenship Award recipient for the NBA, which is super cool. He made a statement on it in his media availability today. And, I mean, really just like, beyond what we cover with the team playing basketball games and stuff like that, just, like, it's fun to cover a guy like that. Like, I want to tell his stories more and amplify the things he says more because he's a good community member. But, anyway, carry on.
Yeah, if anybody out there has not read his – I think he wrote a column in USA Today – around the George Floyd protest, it was a really good thing, really good, well-written piece, and that it kind of shows to just how worldly he thinks and how smart he is. So, yeah, great dude. So on today's podcast, we're going to do something not as sophisticated as Malcolm Brogdon, and that is talk about basically the eight guys who have done their pre-training camp pressers, which is Sabonis, Oladipo, Coach Nate Bjorkgren, Justin Holiday, Stanley, Brogdon, and Turner. We're going to go in that order, and we're just going to talk about basically what they said at their presence, our reaction, and, you know, I don't know, shoot the shit some more.
We finally have info from players' mouths about their offseason, about where they're at, about what they think of the coach, about their free agency. It's a lot of stuff, and none of it on its own is like a big deal, but it's definitely enough info to do a whole show like this, and it's important to break that down and contextualize how it could matter for the season, I think.
Yeah, so let's start with Sabonis, and since Tony has been the guy who has actually been on these pressers, I'll let him begin all these.
Sure. So we're going to go in order of the pressers. Domas was first on Tuesday. They're calling it Media Week, December 1st through 5th. So the guys we will not get to today are the guys who will be speaking Friday and Saturday, which will probably be TJ Warren and two bench players, TBD.
But don't worry, we'll talk about that on Monday's show. So
that's going to be the schedule show. But TJ Warren doesn't like talking to the media that much, so he won't be that much stuff to talk about. Anyway, Sabonis was first. Obviously, the first questions are about his injuries. He's great. He's already working out in the Pacers practice facility. They send us footage of the guys working out. Sabonis looks great. No boot like we saw last. We saw him in that bubble scrimmage was the last time we saw him on the bench with that boot on. No boot, working out fine. He says he feels great and his body's good to go. So obviously, first of all, that's great news.
Yeah. I guess I'm not surprised by that, right?
Not at all.
You would expect that the plantar pressure doesn't last, almost 5 months, basically?
5 months. Yeah, I mean, it can be like nagging, but not enough that it keeps you off the court for that long. So
yeah, exactly. It might still be an issue this year, but it shouldn't be as bad, hopefully, because he had a lot to rest on it and get it healed.
Yeah, Tim Duncan dealt with it for like forever, but he didn't. It wasn't so bad he couldn't play through it, right? So Sabonis got through the bad part. Now I think he can go through it. The other thing, I'm just reading through my Twitter because I tweeted stuff that I thought was interesting and important. And if you Adams listened to some of these, so if you remember anything, feel free to chime in. Another thing I have here, and this is a common theme we'll get to with many of these players, is Domas was in L.A. this summer. He spent a lot of time with family. He got engaged. Something he mentioned was Nate Bjorkgren, new coach, flew out to L.A. to see him and meet with him and, you know, he did a workout with them, but he, like, went to one of their workouts to see what they could do. And, you know, they had dinner. With all these guys, we'll get to all of them. It's Domas, Vic, Brogdon, and Turner for sure. I'm sure there's more. But, you know, he talked about their role and what they can do on the team. But I just think it's cool that right after Bjorkgren gets hired, his first thing is doing a country tour, basically, because all those guys were in different spots, L.A. for Sabonis. So just doing that tour to connect with his players and talk about how he envisions using them, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I think that sort of shows, I guess, him trying to be a little more personal with the players the way McMillan wasn't, right? I mean, that was something that was,
I was
pretty
say,
clear.
That's already more than I feel like McMillan did.
It was pretty clear that McMillan, while was, I thought, an okay coach, just didn't really, like, care about the players' personal lives, getting to know them, stuff like that. I mean, I think actually a really telling, which is kind of interesting, remember that was 2 years ago, it seemed like 9, 10, 11 of them all got together That summer to work out in Miami with Vic, and there was no picture of McMillan there. Now, that maybe you can't do that because there's some rules and whatnot, but still, it just seemed like McMillan, and he even quoted since he was just had a disconnect because he was 62 years old coaching players in their 20s.
No, that's been quoted, 30s. Right?
Yeah, it has been. I think it was in an article from Jay Michael when he interviewed Justin Holliday, was, I believe, in that story, and talked about that a little bit. And Bjork is much younger. How old is Bjork?
He's in his 40s. I don't know his exact
age. Right? He's just a much younger coach. He's, even though he might be a little, I mean, let's say 15, 20 older than most of the players, he probably has a, like Nick Nurse has this kind of personality, right? A younger personality, tries to kind of be one of the, be a player's coach and stuff like that. So, and they seem to be, him and Nick Nurse seem to be similar. There was a good thing by Jack McMullen, basically said they're like two peas in a pod. Like they'll go everywhere together in the offseason. Him and Nick Nurse used to like go to comps together and whatnot. So they're very similar personalities. So that makes sense. It kind of follows that track.
He's 45, and we'll get to Brogdon's thing, but Brogdon also mentioned him being more of a player's coach later on. So, yeah, he fits more of a bill of that communicator that Kevin Pritchard was looking for. Seems like Sabonis bringing this up, and we'll get to it with all the other guys about their meeting is encouraging and already shows a sign of, you know, connecting to his players that we haven't seen in old Pacers regimes. Again, McMillan had his strengths and weaknesses. Communication with his players, not one of them. The last one, and this is, again, another theme that we'll get to with every player. So Sabonis, pretty short with all of his answers, just who he is. Not that he doesn't like media. He just very quickly and directly answers every question, which honestly I appreciate. The other thing I noted here that we'll get to with a bunch of other guys, mainly Miles, is that when he talks to Bjork and in this meeting in LA, he feels like the Pacers are going to play similar to the Raptors, you know, faster, more threes, blah, blah, blah. We hear that all the time from like, that's the PR thing from the summer. You know, I don't want to lean too much on that, but I did hear from every guy, we all did. So I think that is more specific. You know, it's not just like arbitrary, non-numeric, we're going to take more threes and play faster. It's we're going to play like this thing that already exists. And Sabonis specifically mentioned cutting out long twos. And if you go to the Raptors, they were sixth in the league in three-point attempts per game last season and 17th in free throws. So just below average in free throws, really high in three-point attempts. So perhaps if we are actually able to base it off of concrete numbers of the Raptors and base Bjorkren's style somewhat on that influence, that, you know, this isn't just PR smoke, and maybe the Pacers are going to play like the Raptors and do the thing that they always say they're going to do and play faster and shoot more threes.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully Sabonis are taking some threes consistently, right? I think last season he takes
a lot of shots between the elbow and the three-point line that just don't need to happen.
So he took about one a game last year. I mean, I think it would be nice to see him at about two, especially if you can shoot him at a much – I mean, this year he shot 25%, so that's – obviously he can't – just shoot at that rate, he can't keep shooting them. But, like, for example, let's see, of his shots, about a quarter of them came between 3 and 10 feet. And I wish they had done this set a little bit more because he probably did a lot of 4 to 5 foot shots, but that's still – a pretty high number, I think, that led all Pacers by far. Actually, McConnell had a 24%, but of the stars and whatnot. And so you would love to see him cut down that 3 to 10 foot range and really cut out completely the 10 to 16 foot range and be taking either those as threes or turning them into other passes or just going to the rim or whatnot in some ways. Because they're just super inefficient shots and not needed almost.
Right. Yeah. And what has been talked about by statistical studies with mid-range shots is, The what's actually going away isn't mid-range shots, right? The guys who can make them should still take them. What's really going away is the assisted mid-range shot. A lot of the mid-rangers that still happen are off the dribble. You know, the McCollums, the TJ Warrens, all the superstars can make it. It's really nice to have that variation in your profile. But the assisted two is going away because why are you running a play for an inefficient shot? Well, the Pacers still did a lot of that, right? Sabonis took lots of them. Turner took lots of them off of sets, right? They got to cut those out, and I think Bjorken's going to do that.
David West would be appalled. He loved setting up that free throw shot. And
he made
it like 100% of the time, so it was worth it every time.
The thing is, yeah, the reason the Pacers didn't like their true shooting slash effective field goal percentage slash offensive rating wasn't just horrible is because the guys who took those shots at least made them at a respectable enough rate that their offense was fine, but it definitely could have been better if they just cut them out.
Yeah,
I think we move on to Vic because Vic was also the same day, and this is going to take us the longest time before –
so yeah, that's fine.
Fly through this segment. Sabonis, still though, very telling, and we're going to be talking a lot about the similarities to the Raptors, I think, throughout the season and throughout this exact podcast. So Depot is second. This was obviously a big one. You can tell how interested the story is going to be of these answers by the number of media people in the press conference or how long it is. And Depot's was at least 2.5 times as long as everybody else's, and there were a ton of people in it. But the very first question, of course, about his health, because you know, at the end of last season. He's kept maintaining, you know, he's still getting healthy. He's still getting healthy, which is alarming at this time. And it's basically, it's December of 2020, right? It's been almost 2 years since the injury. But he said he feels a lot better. He feels a lot stronger. And he feels even better than he did in the bubble. And Adam, as you pointed out, because you watched it, he just looks like he's got more energy and happiness.
Yeah, it looks like he's well rested.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, I like in the bubble, he just kind of didn't look like – he looked like he was – either he was trying too hard or pushing himself to a limit he wasn't ready to do yet, where – and maybe he's been off for 3 or 4 months now, and that helps. But he just looks like he had been in Miami, relaxing, maybe working out and whatnot, but getting a nice sleep every night, maybe, you know, enjoying the beach in this quarantine and whatnot. he just looked like – he just looked more at peace. And I think maybe a coaching change helped him too. I think the coaching change in a way signals that they're not going to push him to ways McMillan did, right? McMillan just was so reliant on him and so, like,
yeah,
kind of almost in a way overused him in the same way Thibodeau kind of was known for, with Joakim Noah, Jay Butler, right? Just using them to the point where their bodies couldn't handle it sometimes. And obviously Butler's could, cause he's a, you know, it's like a ungodly athlete and otherworldly, but I think that maybe has helped him to feel a little better about himself. I mean, I think the biggest thing I worry about him going in, and you're still in kind of, you kind of said it, is this still his team? Because I think he was worried it's now become kind of a Brogdon Sabonis' team in some way, at least Brogdon's locker room. And so right. Would he be okay with that? And maybe he would be, as long as he's the guy, you know, hitting the clutch shots and whatnot, which he's still going to be, I think. But maybe he's better. Maybe he's more comfortable being in, you know, scoring under 20 points a game, but being the guy who hits every big shot in the last 2 minutes and has really efficient and can stay healthy throughout the whole season.
Yeah, that's true. Brogdon did talk about in his own press for being a leader, but I agree with all that. Depot also talked about his meeting with Bjorkgren, right? He said he and Bjorkgren really clicked and called Bjorkgren amazing. And the part that everybody's going to love, their meeting was in Miami, Florida. So,
we should note the Heat don't have that much cap space next summer.
No, they did spend money on a band. They can still get to about $26 million in space, though, which should
But the Pacers can trump that with a lot of money.
They sure can. And you know what? We'll just get right to that. But, yeah, good that Bjorkgren again. Miami, L.A., we'll get to two other cities. But, yeah, so first someone asked Deep about his commitment to the Pacers. He said, quote, "I never came out and said I didn't want to play for the Pacers and be in the organization," unquote. That's true. That was all source reporting. Nothing from his mouth specifically said that. Maybe he did privately. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. But in the press conference, that is what he said, and he's looking forward to the season. We'll get to this free agency stuff all just right now. So I think it's important, and I'm going to harp on this in this whole conversation, is to cut through when Depot is talking about right now and when he's talking about the future, because often he would mention that he likes Indiana, but I think that is him talking about right now. He likes Indiana because he's here, he's played here, he went to college here. He does like Indiana. I just also think he likes other places more. And that makes it hard when he's talking about his future, when he's talking about the future tense, to cut through that he's not saying, well, or it didn't appear to me that he said, "I want to be in Indiana long term," because he was asked, if you straight up, I forget which news station asked, if he wants to be in Indiana long term. He said, "That's out of my control. I'm focused on the now." And then he talked about Indiana a little bit. But I interpreted this to mean two things, and I am totally rambling, or could mean two things. One is that, right, I mean, that's a very dodgy answer. He had plenty of time to think about this. Kind of weird. You know, he could have just said, "Yeah, I want to be in Indiana for a long time, but, you know, I know it's a business and I'll figure that out later." He didn't say that. But it is out of his control. If the Pacers aren't offering, you know, he mentioned that there's no extension on the table right now. You know, it really could be that maybe he does want to be here and the Pacers haven't offered him anything or discussed offering him anything. And it is all business at this point. So, technically not a ton you can read into it, but given the past Depot and the phrasing of the answers and the careful wording of verbiage, I'm inclined to be a little bothered by his lack of commitment.
So he gets on an extension any time during the year, right?
I don't know that. I believe so. He couldn't last year.
No, but I don't know what the difference is. You can sign the 125% thing anytime.
No, because last year he could only do it in the off season with the 125.
I know, but when you have 1 year left, I think you can.
I think with 1 year left that changes, though. I'm not 100% on that, but I think so.
So I think his thing is one, clearly he had nowhere else to go. I mean, there wasn't
– right.
His trade market was, you know, less than zero. I mean, they would have to put an act to get rid of him, so they weren't going to do that. Clearly teams – he's not in a position where he has been so good for so long that, like – teams were clamoring for him. He was really good for 1 year, was a top 20 player for one season, but hasn't done it more than that. And that's, you know, so he has to prove he's worth somebody else going to get him. Yes, I mean, if he's a free agent, teams will go after him, but I mean, not for the big money that he wants, right? I mean, at this rate, he, you know, he probably in the bubble is getting maybe a mid-level, higher, maybe slightly higher. I mean, he's not getting a ton of money if that happens. So, I mean, I think some of that is when he says it's out of his control, means like teams just don't want him yet. Now, if he has a great year, he'll have plenty of suitors, one of them being Miami, probably Dallas, and whatever other team can put together cap space for him. But then at that point, too, if he has a great year, he might want to re-sign because it might make the most sense, you know, to have that kind of success, right? Because if he's going to have, you know, and the Patriots might give him more years, because I still think even if he has this amazing season, there's still going to be a lot of skepticism about his age, the amount of games he missed in his career, his injury history and whatnot. He's not going to get – he might not even get a 4-year or 5-year deal from another team, even if he has, you know, a 20 – average 20 points a game this year, I mean, in the low 20s. I just – he's that much of a risk, I guess, in a way. And so I guess his saying is more of like a situational thing. I don't know.
It might be.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, unless – like I said, he had nowhere else to go, so what else was he going to do?
It's all weird, and, you know, I get a little dissuaded that he actually – wants to be in Indiana long term every time he talks, but it could be this, and maybe this is two Pacers colored glasses-y, which, you know, we've been doing a little bit too often the last couple of weeks, but like there's a chance to me, and you can interpret all this way, is that maybe he does want to be, or maybe he does have his eyes for another team, but not so much that he couldn't be persuaded to stay with Cash, right? And that's why he's saying what he is, of, you know, he really doesn't know. And it's a business decision. Maybe that's true, and he's just done an absolutely horrible job of PRing it, and that if he really does play well and the Pacers put up a ton of cash, he'll stay if that is necessary. But again, he said everything horrible, like, for months.
Yeah, well, why do you think Gord Hayward in Charlotte? Because money speaks, man. I don't think Hayward wants to be in Charlotte.
Money does speak.
That badly, but the money speaks. And he's not.
Hayward got a trade kicker too, right? Like, he can set up a home there now. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Money speaks.
Yeah, the Goldie situation is not similar to the PG situation, because PG was an established superstar who was maybe one of the best 10 players in the league. And so he had a lot of options, right? Any team was going to want him. Even, you know, post leg snapping in half, PG
still proved he's still good.
Yeah, he was on his way to, you know, I think before he got hurt, probably like a top 5 player that season. Then he got hurt and had to claw his way back. Maybe never got back to top 5, but was still top 15, if not top 10 sometimes. And so it's just different. Oladipo, you know, it had a single year as good as one of, you know, PG's top years, but he hadn't been there for like 3 or 4. So he's not necessarily the same established star. I mean, he just has to it's kind of a make or break prove it season. And I think for him too, considering the interest, right, it's going to be about how he can lock up as much money as possible guaranteed. Because if I had to guess, he will have another major injury in his career because of the way he plays. You know, he's
right.
Plays reckless. He's small. Smaller than most guys. I mean, look at Russell Westbrook, right? He plays kind of like him and probably isn't quite as strong as Westbrook. And Westbrook's had like 7 knee surgeries, I feel like, over the years, if not other things.
At least, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's certainly an interesting situation for him. And I just – it's his words just hit me wrong every time, even if they're all technically not devastating Pacers news. It's just odd. So I didn't really know what to make of it, but it definitely didn't sound good in the moment. And sound good as in like about, you know, his attitude about the team, but it wasn't so detrimental that you think there's going to be chemistry issues. He's clearly enthusiastic about the coach and is clearly healthy, and he seemed jubilant in general. He just got asked that question so many times that I think he dragged it on. But yeah, in general, I would say Depot outlook for this one season, pretty good. I mean, seems healthy, seems excited. Maybe he'll buy into the team culture and be ready to go.
Yeah, he has to play good because he won't earn his money if he doesn't. So that's the encouraging sign. He can't be a disgruntled star.
Contract year.
Well, he's not like a Davis or even a PG last year. He can't be disgruntled and still get paid, right? If he doesn't play well, he's not getting paid. So there's a big incentive for him to actually show up and play, you know, be his best self. So that's the encouraging thing. Okay, let's do this turn. Let's take one quick break, and then we have the new head coach and 4 more players to talk about. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Built Go. Built Go is the same company that brought you guys Built Bar, which has been one of our great sponsors for almost the entire year. Built Go is like a 5-hour energy without the same crash. It's the perfect thing to help you break through that mental or physical wall. It comes in an easy 1.5-ounce package you can put in your briefcase, your golf bag, your backpack, or just carry in your back pocket. It comes in three delicious flavors, peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and for better results. Stuff is fast, it's over with a little bit of kick of caffeine in it, and it's good on your for your skin, your teeth, and your hair. And right now, if you go to BuiltGo.com, use promo code LOCKED, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off your next order at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. So I think, Tony, this was the most interesting person during this whole presser, and that was Nate Bjorkman, the new coach. Haven't really heard much from him except for that, you know, introductory press conference. It's good to see him in a hoodie and relaxed and whatnot, and looking like he wasn't really caring about the interviews. But I think to me, this is the one I was looking forward to the most.
Yeah, I always like hearing from him right now because he's new and all the info he says is like is fresh, right? Not fresh as in like refreshing, fresh as in I haven't heard this before. I don't know what to expect from him every time he talks. And I really am learning new info and developing ways to assess the team. But yeah, it was cool to hear from him. And he talked about his many meetings and dinners and assessments of players, which I thought was really fun and cool. I honestly, if I had to name a one favorite thing from all these media sessions, it's that he did that. I just think that's awesome. But the first thing I tweeted that I loved is that he described his play style as fun and disruptive. How about those for two conflicting words?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm trying to understand what fun means, I guess. Does that mean it mean fun for the fans or fun for the players or both?
I think both because, you know, other players mentioned like more weak side movement and players like shooting threes and players like running fast and creating all these interesting opportunities. And fun to watch typically means fun to execute. So I would guess fun is good, right?
I guess maybe the right way I'm trying to phrase this is like, he seems like every tech startup would say this, right? And I don't know if it's just BS or is like true. I guess we'll find out in about a month, in like 3 weeks. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess we heard him kind of say this before, right? In the opening press, I think he said the same. I mean, maybe it wasn't quite this buzzwordy, but it was similar, right? He said, I want to play fast. I want to, you know, change things up.
Oh,
I wanna,
for sure.
Yeah. And it might be real. I guess the thing I have a hard time is like until you actually see him coach, I just have trouble like believing what he says. If that makes sense. Not that he's not being truthful. Just don't know. You just don't know, frankly.
Yeah, specifics is going to be impossible until we actually see him coach a game. And really, walking into this Depot situation we just talked about, manage the team. Right, he's got a lot to do coaching wise this year that we'll learn a lot about him, but. Yeah, I thought those were two fun words. I thought disruptive was pretty interesting. I think that matches his defensive aggression that he's talked about, how he's going to have his guys just be up in your face. Good point of attack defense and get creative on that end. But fun and disruptive, my favorite words.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with him is it's about player relationships at this point, the Pacers, right? Yep. It's I mean, you know, the whole Oedipus, I mean, it's about developing the relationships where you can – tell a guy he can't go out there or can't or should be the guy at times. You know what I mean? Being able to you know, tell Oladipo you need to pull it back for a minute because you're too crazy or all over the place. Or being able at the time to say, no, we're going to go with wherever here for the big shot, not you. We're going to use, you know, you as a fake at times or whatnot. I don't know. I mean, I think the question for him will be, or the biggest test will be, once the season gets going and we hit that inevitable little downswing that always happens, how does he react to that? How do the players react to it? And like, I guess more importantly, it's sort of, how does he balance, you know, probably three guys who believe they could score 20 points a game at, you know, in the season when they all can't do that?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll learn a lot about him in his first year, right? It's just about his dip, both him as a coach and potentially McMillan as a coach, right? We'll learn how much he was potentially impacting this team as well. But yeah, good X's and O's answer from him. And the other thing, someone asked him about Turbonis, or I guess Turner Sabonis pairing, and he gave the most vague and kind of useless answer of all time. So I'm very helpful for talking about it. But he said, they'll be together on the floor. They'll be separate on the floor. They're both very versatile, and I'm learning more about them every day. So sounds like they'll still play together a fair amount, and he likes their skill sets. And that's all we know, because he played Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka together. And, he, you know, Pascal Siakam's kind of a four, not a five. But he played two bigs together before, so I don't think he's hesitant to do it. I think he would still do it. And I think he thinks they're good. But he also mentioned them being separate. So I don't know what to make of that. Probably nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the same thing we've always talked about, is can Turner be comfortable just shooting threes from the corner, from the top of the key? And can he make one high enough rate that he makes him keep on the court, right? If he, you know, is a 40% three-point shooter, he can stay on the court and play Sabonis all day long on offense. Now, defensively, we'll have to figure that out, and that will be trying to see what they do there. But, I mean, that's the key. And the problem with Turner has been that, like, what? It was an article, I want to say, like, in December last year, defending him, right, how he's still adjusting to being, you know, the fourth or fifth option on the court and isn't quite figuring it out yet and whatnot. It's just, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. I have a feeling it won't have a long leash, let's put it that way. It sounds like. It feels like to me it's sort of like, try it at times, but we're going to keep him apart and stagger him as much as possible. And the way Sabonis plays, minutes-wise, it'll be hard to, you know, find Turner a ton of minutes if they do it due to staggering.
Yeah, the other thing is he mentioned that there's no limitations for guys who are healthy right now. So I'm guessing Lamb is not in this group of guys practicing, but everyone else, no limitations. So that's good. Seems like a pretty good bill of health for Bjorkren's first team and first time coaching.
Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts. So the next guy to speak was Justin Holiday, the newly minted $18 million man. The one quote I want to start with, I'm going to start this one actually, and I think Marina said it, gave it to me earlier today or yesterday, I think when you then, and that was him just talking about wanting to make Indianapolis his home, enjoying, you know, I thought that was really good. He basically, I'm not direct quoting him, but essentially said he has been looking, you know, he's been a journeyman player for so long, I'm looking for a place that he can just, like, you know, put his family in and be a place that's his, and that's why he helped him sit in Indiana. I think he probably took even less money than he could have gotten in the open market. And I think it shows kind of a good sign of what he views with the Pacers, including his role maybe as kind of a leader. And it's, I thought it was kind of nice just to hear him say that, I guess.
Yeah, he had to become a leader. I mean, he kind of was in Chicago, but more so with this team because he was the sagest vet by a mile. And he's still the only guy with championship experience on this team, which, I mean, he was a low-level guy for the Warriors. But still, it's something – so yeah, bringing back that vet and him reflecting that way, his thoughts on the city and the team, I thought was really appealing. And most of the stuff I had from this one, because I actually missed this one, so I had to come back and watch it later and read the quotes. But most of the stuff I thought about from this one was free agency adjacent for him, just hearing from him too. And I thought it was really funny that he said he didn't like free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's the kind of guy who just, like, wants to be somewhere. You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean,
well, he probably hates a free agency, too, because his career's been in limbo every time he's been a free agent up to this point.
Yeah, I think he likes to have the guaranteed money, no matter what. Even if he gets traded at some point, he just knows what he's making each year, and it's locked in. There's no variables.
Right. He also mentioned that he wasn't sure, right? I mean, he was, like, he probably was leaning Indiana, but he wasn't sure for sure right away that it was going to be Indy right away. But again, he said it's a very comfortable place. He enjoyed playing and it was the best for him to come back. And I agree. Good for him. He gets a big rotation spot and good money. So good for him.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't know how it was going to work out because, I mean, I guess it was probably,
I thought he'd get more than this.
Well, I guess I thought he'd get more than that, but, like, I mean, I guess there's still really no way, even if they had managed to, even if they had signed Hayward, they still would have cleared space probably by getting rid of, Leaf and be able to sign him to this deal again, I guess. But, like, remember, this deal kind of came the night of the first, right? It came right after.
Their only first day deal.
Right. And so I'm not sure the Hayward trade really affected his signing that much, I guess, because I think they could have found the money for him anyways. It was just the deal that he got. But it definitely was for a few minutes. They're like, oh, if they go after Hayward, their mid-level might be much smaller than we think, and then they can't go after Justin Holiday. And so I think that definitely probably got him a little bit concerned and whatnot.
Well, I know Justin's saying, you know, he doesn't like free agency and these decisions and what, maybe decisions is the wrong word. He doesn't like this process and whatnot. But I will say, you get signed the first day of free agency, odds are you're pretty damn good and you're in demand, right? And you have to make those choices. Well, Richardson
doesn't have his presser a while ago, right? He was the one guy he made a great strides, whatever, and he was contributing or whatnot. They went to bring him back. I mean, there was clearly a lot to like on from both sides with the Pacers and him.
I don't have anything else from his, mostly because I missed it, but I liked his thoughts on free agency in Indy, and I'm glad he's back for 3 years. Another good community guy.
Okay, let's take one more break, and we'll end talking about Stanley Brogdon and Turner. So I think we can go through the rookie pretty fast, Tony, right? Not a lot. I think your highlight to me quote was, he signed a lease. I said, great.
He did. He says he secured his apartment. He said his expectations for the year is that he's going to come in, play hard, and play aggressive. And if he didn't say something like that, that would have been a concerning answer to that question. And this is the only part that is different. His locker in the locker room is next to Victor Oladipo's. And he said he's been asking Vic a lot of questions about being in the league and being prepared for his rookie year. And I tweeted that, and everyone was like, so he's asking him how to eventually betray his team and leave. So,
oh my
that
God. Was pretty funny, but.
Grow up. Yeah, I like that Vic's being a leader and reaching out. You know, Vic did tweet at him right after he got picked. So,
yeah. Isn't he also a Russell Westbrook? Aren't him and Russell Westbrook and Cat Stanley like friends?
Yeah, Russ was with them for the draft, right? Yeah.
Right, and who played with Russell Westbrook last year or 2 years ago? Sorry, 3 years ago now.
Yeah, Victor Oladipo.
Victor Oladipo. Aren't they still friends too? Technically, I don't know.
I don't know much about that, but
no, but potentially. I think they do. I think I remember when the Pacers played the Rockets, there was at least they showed up, you know, pictured for the game of Russ talking to Oladipo and catching up for a second. So I think it might hang in some of the same crowds, but that was the rookie. I think the more interesting stuff comes from the two starters who spoke to and out.
Hey, Cassius is interesting, but he's not going to play much, and none of the questions were really about his fit with the Pacers and more about him, so he has nothing crazy.
Yeah, so I think we should move to Brogdon, who I think, probably Turner was the most interesting one, but I thought it was pretty interesting when you talked to UC Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, both of them were pretty interesting. Brogdon, of course, opening with a statement about winning the J. Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award, which is great. I love that that's the first thing he talked about. He won it like 10 minutes before his media session, so he had to come up with that statement on the fly too, which was interesting. But with terms of actual basketball, one of the first things he talked about is going back to something that Sabonis mentioned. Brogdon talked with Kyle Lowry and some other Raptors guys about Nate Bjorkgren, how that team played, and that's where Brogdon said he got the vibe that Bjorkgren's a player's coach is talking to those Raptors guys. And so again, you know, there's always the PR smoke of this and that's going to be awesome this year. But when hearing it like that, instead of just Brogdon saying, yeah, he seems like a player's coach, it's Brogdon saying, here is why I think he's going to be a player's coach. This is the evidence I have. I like that better. And it makes me more confident that it's going to be true.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the thing about him going into the year that I'm looking for the most is he's going to have to probably be the guy that plays the in-between Sabonis and Oladipo, if that makes sense. Like, those two are probably going to be battling to kind of be the focal point of the offense. He's going to have to be the guy distributing the ball out in a somewhat fair manner, and he's going to have to kind of, I don't know, it's going to be a tough role for him at the minimum.
I think Brogdon's probably my most interesting player for the Pacers this year. He mentioned that he's working on his three ball in his presser, which is good because he needs it. But between Sabonis and Depot, right, I think those guys – if Depot's even kind of good, which I don't know how good he'll be, but if he's even kind of good, those two guys are going to be the highest two usage guys on the team, Depot and Sabonis. It's just how it's going to be. But no matter which one of them is the guy with the ball in their hands on a given possession, Brogdon is option two. He is secondary creator guy, right, just because of the way, you know, Vic and Domas aren't as good off ball as he is. So – he's going to be toggling a lot of primary and secondary duties that are going to be pretty hard to manage. So I think having a guy like Bjorkgren, who Brogdon quoted as being, quote, incredibly creative and interactive, unquote, is going to be interesting for him because he'll have tough duties, but also good for him in that it could kind of unlock him in a way that I think is better than him just being primary ball handler all the time.
Yeah, I mean, right, he was a really good off-the-ball player with Milwaukee, and obviously playing with Giannis makes anybody good off-the-ball player, but he's especially good. I mean, it obvious last year, right, he was the player they were kind of missing, to be honest. They clearly needed some guy like that who could be, you know, the third or fourth option and hit.
For 2 months, they had the Brogdon they thought they would get.
Yeah. But, so, the question will be is, can they figure out how to get him some more off-the-ball shots? Can they, you know, can he be the guy that's open for a corner three? But at the same time, he also said he can be a point guard. So we'll just see if he's used in more ways, right? I felt like last year he was kind of used maybe only, let's say, two or three different ways. Can he be used, you know, four or five ways, and that helped create a little more creative offense?
Well, Lowry's not, like, just looking at Toronto, because we have ample evidence of guys talking about this. Lowry's not, like, a ball pounder, right? Like, he initiates stuff, but he has plenty of moving.
Sometimes.
What? No, he's not.
Lowry, sometimes he is. I mean,
no way. Well, really? I don't think.
Like, end of game, Lowry's just like, is a ball pounder. But I get what you mean. He's not all the time, yes.
No, I feel like Pascal had the ball a lot. Fred had the ball. I feel like they shared it quite a bit.
I feel like in the playoffs, it really was Lowry because Pascal was screwing up and couldn't.
Lowry played a ton of minutes, but.
I just remember Lowry kind of doing like a driving in, double dribble, throw his shoulder in, fade back jumper. He'd hit it and he was good. I know what you mean. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Anyway, more just stuff that, yeah, obviously Brogdon's going to be the point guard. I think he even said that himself, that, you know, he, something he likes about Indiana is that role for him, but we'll see what kind of that translates and how that helps with Bjorkgren. And then, yeah, he also talked about working on his three balls, finishing at the rim, right? Finishing at the rim, I thought, was the thing that just sunk him a lot last year because, again, I brought this up on this show a million times. He's really good at getting about a half step on his defender, but not quite a full step. So if he could just get a tad better at finishing, I mean, he's got the opportunities.
Yeah, he forced the 2-point shot. Like, he was not like he forced, but he was forced to take shots maybe that in some situations he wouldn't, if that makes sense, right? Like in any, you know, ideal world, he'd get kind of stuck going to the rim and he'd kick it out to somebody or whatnot, but he didn't always have that option. And with Oladipo there, hopefully they can make that work in some better way.
Yeah, he's a weird finisher in general.
Yeah.
But confirmation, tomorrow's media is going to be Nate Bjorkgren, TJ Warren, and Jeremy Lamb. I was incorrect about the third player. But anyway, yeah, Brogdon, I felt like with his finishing, he'd either make it or just not even hit the rim, right? Like, that's because that's just the nature of his shots being tougher at times. So I'm looking forward to seeing how any of that translates, how playing with a new coach really evolves or transforms his game and what his role is supposed to be. The other thing is he's pretty confident. Well, this is probably PR smoke, but Brogdon seems pretty confident in the team. He said, the sky's the limit for this team. I think this is a deadly team. I think this is a team that's slept on. I mean, we're going to hear that every summer, but
yeah, we'll see. So now we'll move on to the last guy who's spoken this week so far, and that is the man Danny Ainge did not want in Miles Turner.
Oh, apparently Brogdon, and I don't know this one. Sorry. I don't know this for sure on the location, but given I think Brogdon's in Atlanta for some of this offseason, I believe that's where Bjorkgren and him met. They both also linked up. The last guy, yes, Turner, who met with Bjorkgren in Santa Barbara, Santa something. In California, I don't know how far that is from LA. Different places. Anyway,
I'm pretty sure it's in Los Angeles, just one of the, you know, the surrounding cities.
Oh, well, that's less travel than a fourth location. So maybe the Sabonis Turner meetings were just back to back. But
yeah, the greater LA area, I think, is where Santa Barbara is.
Yeah, Turner. Turner said he met with Bjorkgren, said they had great communication. He loved his energy, and he mentioned that he's been working with Greg Foster, the assistant coach to Howard from the Hawks, a lot. Former NBA big man himself. He called him Jeff Foster, which was funny, but. Also, same kind of deal. Seems like Miles likes Bjorkgren, and he mentioned that he's been watching film of like Chris Boucher and Serge Ibaka and some Raptors guys. So again, I think the Raptors thing is legit, and Miles is watching film on guys he could end up playing like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting he said probably was, I mean, that he was taking it seriously, right? I guess my point being is I feel like he'd come into this year and be just pissed, right? I mean, it wouldn't be so, and honestly, nobody would blame.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, but and nobody could blame him. But he seems to at least have embraced that he's here, he's professional, and he's going to try his hardest and, you know, try to learn and try to fit into the system in some way.
I can only read what they're saying, of course. And again, could be a lot of PR stuff going on here that I don't know about. But it seems like every player is kind of invigorated by the new coach, right? It seems like they're like, awesome, you know, this guy's going to really help us take off and be a little bit better than we have been in the
it
past.
It does talk about monkeys lifted off their back. And I guess we really didn't think about it, but I do wonder if, you know how Milne was called a sergeant before he came here and all kinds of, I do wonder if he just was this like the players who were all young, all smart, probably were like, why are we not playing a modern style? Right. They probably all wanted to play like, you know, maybe not like Houston, but maybe like Milwaukee or, you know, and that kind of name. They probably couldn't figure out why. And they really probably didn't have a voice to, you know, say why they weren't. Or
yeah, we heard for years when players would get asked about mid-range shots, they wouldn't say like, yeah, we're doing what we think is the best. They're like, yeah, coach always tells us to take those. You know,
the only one who probably liked the system is Thad Young because he fit it perfectly.
Yeah, and the Sarge thing applies to training camp, which is happening right now, right? If you go to yesterday's podcast, Alex Poythress, former player for the team, we talked about training camp. You should go check that out. Anyway. He mentioned that the Pacers training camp with McMillan was the hardest one he had amongst the three teams he was on between Philly and Atlanta. So maybe that's different too. Just everything's different. Maybe that, you know, maybe they're all invigorated by the new coaching opportunity. Miles also looked good in his workout video. And then, yeah, as Adam brought up, you know, he had every right to be pissed, but that was just directly asked of him, right? Because that's kind of the story for him beyond his play is a huge deal. But and I think in the early week or so of the season is he really bought in? Is he really playing at the highest level? Because, again, like you said, he's every reason to be annoyed he's in trade talks because we've heard from Jonathan Abrams of Bleacher Report, and now it's been discussed often, that the Pacers tell their guys when they're in trade talks. And Miles has been in trade talks for years. But he said that this was like the first time that it was he was involved enough that the front office actually had to call him and tell him like how involved in the talks he was. But he said that he put his head down, didn't really think about it, and he actually was happy they called him to tell him that. But you know, it can obviously affect him, and that's why it's gonna be something to monitor. But it seems like he handled it pretty well.
So I mean, I think that's a way that if the deal falls apart, you're at least not looking as bad on the player, if that makes sense, right?
Right.
I think for Pritchard's sake, it's a good way to say, hey, listen, right. we might be trading, we're not, sorry, my dog is asleep, but seems to be barking now. like she was dead asleep. Anyways, this scared me too. No, I think it's a good way for him to sort of, if he doesn't trade a player, to be like, well, we were honest with you, we're up front with you, and it just kind of build a trust, right? So like then the next, maybe he will be traded at some point, but then he'll know, right? And it just kind of helps with the relationship, so you don't feel like you're left in the dark or out in the cold and randomly just traded that year without knowing. Like that way when he got floated, the trade got denied, he wasn't surprised by it and caught off guard or whatnot. And I'm not surprised. I mean, I don't think either of us thought any Turner trades were serious until this summer, that's this winter now, because they seem like they wanted to try the two centers at least for a full year. So I'm surprised that they didn't haven't talked to him about it yet till now.
Yeah, we've talked about on the show that, you know, all there are various reports about teams calling about him for forever, but it's usually like a team that is young and is trading a crappy pick for him or something, or inquiring about that. And the Pacers would never do that.
They that's not a serious that. Trade. That's Turner, we got an offer for you, but we didn't want to take it because
honestly, that would pump him up. So this was the first serious one that we got reporting from every single side about. And again, it seems like he's handling it well, but that's his public statement. So
the one thing about Turner you can say is he is a professional and he is mature, right? I mean, he doesn't seem like he has petty grudges or this
that. I agree with that.
He seems like he is thoughtful and is not gonna be, I don't know, angry about everything.
Let me addendum that. I think he's a very mature and professional adult. He's also a player whose skill and ceiling level at the time is very much based on his confidence, right?
Yeah.
So who knows how much that will impact his confidence and things like that. I don't know. Again, that's why I think it's something to monitor in the first couple weeks of the season. But his public statement was fantastic. So good job, Miles, on that. The last thing he said that I thought was noteworthy is he said he thinks he'll be more involved in the offensive system this year. That's when he was talking about the Raptor system, or at least it was maybe the next question. I forget exactly. There were back-to-back questions about that. He thinks he'll be more involved. He mentioned more weak side movement, more cutting on the perimeter than there was in the past, which is, it's impossible to have less than they had in the past, so that's a good sign. But I think him being more involved is pretty easy, right? He didn't get the ball that much when Sabonis was on the court. If they get him the ball more with Sabonis out, that makes a lot of sense. There we go.
Well, also, this is the first coach who actually – well, I guess Vogel was probably – right? He was 1 year with Vogel, I think.
Well, he did – Miles specifically did mention that Vogel and McMillan had a lot of the same sets. But anyway, carry on.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that he might finally have a coach who understands how to utilize his skill sets, right? I mean, but what makes Turner great is he's a true stretch five, and there are, not many of those in the league, right? I mean, right. Maybe Embiid is, but not really. But obviously he's different than Embiid, but there aren't that many just like great stretch fives or even good stretch fives. I mean, it depends if you play Porzingis at center or not, or Davis at center, right? Yeah. And so there's a valuable skill set there. If you can make it work, you just have to, you know, really play into it. And you have to understand that a guy like that is not going to just want to sit in the corner for 30 minutes and just take three threes, right? You got to get him a little bit involved. Now he might not get as involved as he wants to be, but you have to sort of create some offense for him because it's kind of the Dwight Howard thing, right? Dwight Howard wanted touches because he didn't want to be just the defensive guy blocking shots, right? And you don't get a lot of accolades for being great on defense, but you do for being a good shooter or whatnot. And so I think there's an opportunity now because the coach might actually be interested in trying to use him as, you know, in different ways that it can actually make him better in some ways, maybe more efficient, maybe not necessarily higher points per game, but a more efficient player.
So let me get ahead of the remaining interviews that we know of. TJ Warren's going to say that he worked on – this is all a guess. This is not actually.
Yeah, you're fine.
TJ Warren's going to say he worked on three-pointers and that he likes Nate Bjorkren and that they talked about his role potentially being at the three or the four. Jeremy Lamb is going to talk about his rehab and how that he is almost all the way healed physically but not quite ready for game action. It might not be till the middle of January, but he is also looking forward to seeing what his role what the bench agreement will be. And Nate Bjorkgren will talk about how everyone has looked awesome that he's watched so far in the training camp process. That is my prediction.
I think that's fair, and I think I'll hold you to that come Monday, but I'm pretty
okay,
sure.
Okay, fair. And well, I don't know who's going to be Saturday, so I can't speak for those people.
Hopefully one of the younger guys, not rookies, Goga or Aaron Holiday.
I hope that as well. I want to know their thoughts on the new coach very much.
I will say the one interesting thing from a nugget that I guess Bob Kravitz pulled from The Athletic was that Goga was homesick last year. I don't know if you might have known that, but it seemed interesting that he did say he must have either talked to Goga or heard something about it. I just thought it was interesting to hear. Maybe that's a good, you know, that's something maybe didn't realize about Goga last year, just like, you know, he played first time away from his home country for a full year, right? And it was probably hard because, as you know,
that's what I was going to say. Wouldn't you be homesick if you were so good at something that you had to go to a different country with no one you knew?
Yeah. I went to a college that was only 10 hours away for about 8 months, and you still get homesick. I mean, it happens. Right. And this is a guy who goes, you know, is playing a professional sport at the highest level under the highest scrutiny with the most intensity. And is, you know, and then you have a pandemic come in the middle of it. And yeah, I imagine it's not the easiest. Let's put it that way. At 19 years old, you know, or 20 years old, however young.
I agree with you there. So.
Anyways.
I got nothing else. That's everybody that's talked so far.
Well, we will have another podcast come Monday breaking down the rest of that, plus whatever else goes on in Pace World. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers, me at Freedom Adam 5, and Tony at Teased NBA. That is all for Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great week.